we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC website read by Neil Sleet.
Two men charged with money laundering after police find stash of banknotes in tumble dryer.
And our thanks to Richard Guthrie for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Miles Jupp and Alexi Sale. And opposite them on my left, journalist for The Economist, Anne McElvoy and Jeremy Hardy. Miles, have a listen to this.
Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Sleigh ride together with you. Sleigh ride together with you.
Miles, where might Santa be able to land his sleigh by 2030?
Oh, well, by 2030, he'll hopefully have another option. Mm. A man called... I don't know really who he is or how you get
Howard
this job.
Howard Davies. Sir Howard Davies. I've always followed him because he's the same age as me, but he looks like 178. He was chairman of the CBI for years.
Oh, and you followed him in a sort of...
Yeah, because I think, well, he looks terrible, but I look a lot better than him.
Do you make him stay in your attic?
No, I've never met him. You should never meet your heroes, really, I think.
Sir Howard Davies, who I've always greatly admired, he says, by 2030, we need an extra runway in London. There's options. One is an extra one at Heathrow, one is an extra one at Gatwick. There's a very, very exciting one, which is an idea called Boris Island, which I think Boris Island should exist. I don't think it should be an airport or a runway. I think it should be a theme park that's just themed around the great Boris. Appropriate enough, there'd be lots of rides in honour of the great man's habits.
Can I just say, for listeners who don't live in the South East, Boris Johnson is not a fictional character. He's the Mayor of London. He's the offspring of a Bond villain and a clown.
Did you notice Boris's choice of words when he said, "There's trouble with the government and airports, they never come to a decision. They've got to stop fannying around." And you thought, well, that's the pot calling the kettle black, really.
I mean, after all the ecological catastrophes there's going to be out there, Gatwick is probably the least noxious one.
Gatwick. You don't live in Gatwick, then?
No, I don't care about anybody who lives there. Well, but I think Gatwick is not a very... It's a poor name, isn't it, really? You know what I mean? Gatwick, like Liverpool's called John Lennon International, so they could should rename it, like, Dizzy Rascal. London Dizzy Rascal International Airport. And then people would feel, like, really hip when they flew in there, wouldn't they? You know?
This 3 kilometre length of tarmac is going to cost around £18 billion. I know, and it should be completed by the year 2050. And I'm pretty sure they got the quote from the same guy who did our conservatory. It's just astonishing. Does anybody know why it was a bad week for Boris, apart from the airport thing?
Has he got his tests back?
No, it was a bad week for Boris. It was revealed that owing to thefts, there are currently as many Boris bikes in the Gambia as there are in... as there are in Bermondsey.
I say if they can cycle that far, let them keep them.
Pictures emerged of the trademark blue bikes riding past mud huts, as well as pictures of them in the Gambia.
It's a London house price, isn't it?
I know, absolutely. This story is the publication of the interim report of the Davies Commission, which has been examining possible sites for airport expansion in London and the South East. The Davies Commission was formed in 2012 after the Davies Experience failed to chart with their debut album. The Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, called the process that led to the Commission a fudgerama, which is also a theme park in Cornwall. 2 points to Miles. Alexei, what do you get if you cross a democratic right with a criminal wrong?
This is that going against an EU directive, the government would still like to stop prisoners having the vote. I mean, I genuinely think, you know, why shouldn't the prisoners have the vote? I mean, if you want to stop people having the vote because they're just horrible, you know, I mean, Ant and Dec wouldn't have the vote, would they, really? So, I mean, obviously, the vote is just a hollow, you know, mockery of democracy that really, comrade, the country is controlled by the giant multinational interests and the military-industrial complex, and it's entirely irrelevant whether the prisoners have the vote or not, but on the other hand, why not, you know? Really.
And they say the BBC has a left-wing bias.
I didn't see why I mean, they've got a lot of thinking time.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be a sort of wasted vote in that regard. They are at the sharp end of frontline services, so they would have opinions about that. But also, if they're voting, they're voting for the same parties that everyone else is voting. It's not generally saying, oh, well, you can't let prisoners vote because they'll all vote for the bank robber party or, you know, the apple scrumping list. They don't, you know, they don't exist.
But then you have all these key... If you're in a key marginal, then the prison... It's going to decide, isn't it? It's going to decide the outcome. How are you going to feel about that? A small swing to the Lib Dems and Wormwood Scrubs. You know, Pentonville went Tory. You know, it's going to be with that swingometer on election night. It's going to get a lot more complicated.
I don't know if they listen to the news quiz. I like the idea. Hello, in prison, if you're listening. I love it.
They do.
Where'd you get that radio?
People who most love radio are in prison because they're in their cells a lot. If you meet a huge fan of Radio 4, they're either a bedridden lighthouse keeper or someone who's committed a terrible offence.
I actually know quite a lot about prisoners and voting, because I was once accidentally locked inside a ballot box.
Cameron says the thought of prisoners voting makes him feel physically sick.
So it's not all bad.
Yes. Well, it's a very useful piece of information. I mean, in the cabinet or whatever, that's a great sort of prank that they can play on him if he's sort of being arrogant and banging on about his, you know, what a great weekend he's had with his chums or whatever. What are they can just say, do you mind if we talk about prisoner voting, David? And he says, or something at the back of my throat. Maybe he doesn't. If he's feeling ill, perhaps he himself deliberately thinks about prisoners voting, you know, like the way a cat eats grass or something like that.
A new line of attack for Ed Miliband at PMQs, isn't it? Just keep going on about that and eventually he'll chuck all over the dispatch box.
A cross-party committee of MPs and peers has recommended that prisoners serving terms of a year or less and those nearing the end of their sentence should be entitled to vote. The joint committee decided that 12 months would be the right level at which to set a custody threshold. Coincidentally, a custody threshold is what is served for pudding in most prison canteens. Oh, come on, it's nearly Christmas. This case calls into question the notion that parliamentary law is sovereign, but emphasises that the UK cannot cherry-pick judgments from the European Court of Human Rights, said Mike the Slasher Brody of B-Wing. 2 points to Alexei. Anne, whose custom seems to be collecting minor rather than major revenue?
Ah, yes, this is HMRC, famously competent and efficient revenue collection, which set out to get a lot of money back that should have been paid in tax from Switzerland, from Swiss bank accounts, people holding them who have an awful lot of money and stash it away, and then got a fraction of it back because no one at HMRC seemed to think that the reason that people put money in Swiss bank accounts is so that other people can't get it. And weirdly, the Swiss didn't go, well, you can have it, here it is. Oh, I'm so pleased you called, because it had been sitting there for quite a long time. And now there's a bit of a shortfall in what they promised they could get back and what they got back, which I think was about 37p.
They've got a huge army in Switzerland, because everyone has to do military service.
But you'd love it, because they never fight anyone.
Well, they've got a terrible level of domestic murder, unfortunately, because they've all got guns in the house. So instead of just saying things like, well, I thought you were going to ring the gas bell, they just shoot each other in the head straight up. No messing about with that. That's why people hide money in Switzerland. They're all armed to the teeth, and they've got those knives. And those... those tweezers tugging on your nose hairs will bring a man to tears.
But it isn't just Switzerland. Last year, despite revenues of $4.3 billion in the UK, Amazon only paid $2.4 million in tax. And that's a shocking shortfall.
Well, I don't understand why the HMRC are sort of scared of these big companies. This idea of saying, oh, but if you know, if you force them to pay tax, they'll leave or something. I mean, if Starbucks just left or something, I mean, that just wouldn't matter, would it? Do you know what I mean? Imagine if they replace me and him, eh?
Yeah.
Or if Amazon, as if sort of Amazon's held in this sort of high regard, as if it's really great, sort of coming home to discover that you've got to trudge to the sorting office or something, rather than the good old days when you would sort of walk to a bookshop and you'd say, I want to buy a book. What could you recommend? And they would recommend something that was actually similar to your preferences, rather than some sort of horrific insult. You know, books about the Nazis that everyone on Amazon's assume you want to read all the time, and then you're given a book that you want and you take it home in a brown paper bag and they've smiled at you or whatever. I mean, I don't think that would be a terrible thing to start happening again. Quite fair. I don't want to sound like sort of John Major talking about maidens cycling through the mist and stuff, but it's not, I wouldn't mind that at all. to be honest. So I'd be quite happy if they, you know,
I'm with you there. Could you just go on about the maidens cycling through the mist again?
They're doing a very difficult job, tax inspectors, and my financial year does end this month.
As once investigators, if you're self-employed, you have to occasionally be checked out. 3 days with this tax inspector. And he said to me, you've got this various expenses down for your office. What is this? What is this? I said, that's for a painting in my office. It was for office decoration. I said, who could work in an office with no art in it? And I looked around and I thought, him. It was him. And after 3 days, he said to me, to be honest, there wasn't really anything wrong with your accounts. I just wanted to meet you. 3 days. He's dead now.
You've still got that Matisse as well,
haven't you? Yes, I have. The Public Accounts Committee, chaired by Margaret Hodge, has criticised Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs for failing to collect tax from major international companies. The report was full of technical jargon: loophole, amortisation, audit and asset, consortium, debtor, equity and gross, which are also the names of George Osborne's reindeer. Keeping the Christmas thing going, people. 2 points to Anne. At the end of round one, the scores are Miles and Alexi have got 4 points, but so too have Anne and Jeremy. We start round two with the description for a child's survival kit spotted on the Amazon website.
Includes water-resistant tin, knife, matches, snare wire, flint and striker, fishing kit, wire saw, accident evaluation form.
Our thanks to Jonathan Moore for sending us that. Miles, whose orientation is a matter for the delegation?
Well, this is some Winter Olympics coming up, and they're in Russia. But they've banned what they consider gay propaganda, back copies of World of Interiors and so forth.
Is that what it is?
I can't think what else it would be.
I don't know. Could you have some sent to my home address? I like this. Thanks.
No, we can delve into our back copies.
Vladimir Putin isn't gay propaganda. I want to know what is. Yeah.
There's a new biography of him by a Moscow political scientist called Stanislav Belkovsky, and he claims that Putin may be latently gay. And you just think, they've left out the letter B in front of that word. Every time I see a photo of him stripped to the waist with a gun, I think, wow, that man is so heterosexual.
Because we don't speak Russian, but most of his speeches begin with, I am what I am.
I love it when you do an impersonation of a lesbian. It's very good.
I'm Britain's most popular lesbian.
I know you are. I know you
are. Move over, bitch.
The United States are including two openly gay sports stars, Billie Jean King and Caitlin Caho, as part of their delegation to February's Winter Olympics, in spite of numerous anti-gay laws enacted by host nation Russia. Many commentators say America is trying to send a message to Russia about gay rights, and that message is, stop being assholes. In a snub to President Putin, neither the president nor the vice president, their wives, nor any current cabinet member will attend the opening or closing ceremonies of the Sochi Games in February. On the other hand, David Cameron will be attending because, on the one hand, you've got homophobic discrimination and human rights abuses, but on the other hand, hello, skiing.
Well, also, he went to the kind of school where it was just high spirits, really. Getting off steam, that sort of thing, you know.
2 points, 2 miles. Alexei, why do M and S not care if you are M or F?
Because Marks and Spencers are stopping producing and selling gender-specific toys, so they're not going to be... If it's like a bake oven or an Action Man or... I used to do this gag, you know, for Christmas I got an empty box and my parents told me it was an Action Man deserter. When I was young, my parents, they were communists, but they wouldn't let me have toy guns, and so I used to make my own toy guns out of bread. I used to chew a slice of Hovis into a kind of L-shape and run around the street going, kew, 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 kew. And I was all right unless it rained, you know, with the other...
If you toasted the bread, it would have held together better.
Oh, yeah. Well, now there's just such a range of breads these days, isn't it?
Baguette, that's what you need. Yeah. That's a rocket launcher, there.
Ciabatta grenade.
Ciabatta, yeah. But, yeah, so Marks and Spencers are not specifically saying that toolkits are for boys and bake ovens and for girls. So they're going to be gender-neutral toys from now on?
I thought most toys were gender-neutral anyway. Have you ever looked under an action man's trousers?
Yeah.
There's nothing there. Can I just say, before you think why I was doing this, I was trying to see if the trousers would fit, but... It's a blank space. There's...
I don't... That's not what they mean.
I saw a baby, a doll baby, around a friend's house that have got young kids, and they've got a doll baby, and it actually had authentic-looking genitalia.
Oh, really?
It was a boy baby, and it had schmeckle.
What sort of friend's house was it?
These were people that I met online who... But they did actually have, like, real genitals on this. Not real genitals, plastic ones. They didn't... grafted human genitalia onto a plastic
doll. It wasn't just a real baby, was it?
But I know that's the point of the story. The point is not to condition kids by making the girl play with my weird pink horse.
Yeah. But what they haven't managed to do is get kids to be non-gender specific, have they? Because you still got, if you give all those dolls to boys, which I've tried having some of each, and then you find they've taken the doll hostage.
I was actually lucky enough to stumble across a shop that sells toys just for lesbians. It's called Wix.
I thought that thing was for cavity wall insulation. I'm so naive.
It's not just the children's thing, though, Marks and Spencers. They have a sort of total... I mean, I asked if they would measure me up at Peruna in Marks and Spencers, and they gave me the oddest look. They treated me as if I was some sort of total pervert rather than a completely normal nude customer.
That's appalling. If there's a petition, I'm signing. So complicated buying things. This is why I'm giving everybody Woolworths vouchers this year. Marks and Spencer intends to make all its toys gender neutral by spring 2014, following complaints about a range of products called Boys' Stuff. M&S toys were labelled Boys' Stuff and Little Miss Artie, while their food items were labelled Poncy Stuff and things you can get cheaper elsewhere. The Boys' Stuff range included planes, cars, dinosaurs, racing cars and a pop-up fire station, while the girls' range included makeup and an application form for a secretarial college. The Little Miss Artie range included images of fairies and princesses. A spokesman said the range encouraged the idea that only girls are obsessed with princesses, which is, of course, untrue. The tabloids are completely obsessed with them, too. 2 points to Alexi. At the end of round two, the scores are Miles and Alexi have got 8 points, but gone into the lead are Anne and Jeremy with 9. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from a promotional flyer for Christmas parties at Folkestone Racecourse.
Complement your Christmas celebration with one of our casino nights for a fun evening of poker, blackjack and Russian roulette.
Our thanks to Paul Adams for sending us that. Miles, when Santa comes to call, why might it not be long distance?
The North-South divide.
Yes.
It's real. It's not just real here, it's real in Belgium and Italy. In France, they have an east-west divide, much as they used to have in Germany, I suppose. but that's a survey of a huge amount of data. I don't know why it's happened, but it turned out that basically, say you take a line 100 miles north of London, people that live north of that line, only 9.1% of their phone calls are made to someone living beneath that line. And the same is true in the other direction, which basically means that people don't seem to make a habit of continually ringing people up that they don't know. for whatever reason. And, you know, you can start ringing people up that you don't know, and this only results in trouble eventually. But
you can do this on Skype. Do you do Skype? So on Skype, you can see who else is on Skype worldwide, and you can say you're available, and you can ring somebody that you don't know. And I tried this. I phoned several people. And what I realised is that I don't know them, and we had nothing to say to each other. It seems like a good idea, but it isn't.
The first time I used Skype, somebody had installed it on my laptop for me, and I pressed a button and I suddenly could hear my aunt and uncle going, "Hello." And I was going, "Oh, hello. Is this Skype? Have I Skyped you?"
I was sort of chatting away to them and doing various other things, and they finally said goodbye, and I closed the window down. I said to my wife about it, and I said, I was just speaking to my aunt and uncle, and she went, what, on the phone? And I went, no, on Skype, I just Skyped them. And she went, you're wearing your pants.
That's so sweet, it takes your wife to point it out
to
you.
I knew that I was wearing my pants, but I did not know that Skype was in any way visual. I just thought... I just thought it was an internet phone thing. Did you know... I was chatting away to them doing, you know, whatever. I was probably, it's not impossible, I was sort of scratching or rearranging myself.
Did you know that people can hear you when you're on the phone? They can hear every word you say.
Oh, God. Oh, no. God, my world is caving in right now.
What about, thing is, though, that most of your calls are to BT customer services, and they're normally... Well, they're not all in the North, but anywhere that used to have industry, aren't they? Like Cardiff used to have docks, Liverpool used to have docks, Belfast used to have terrorism. So you get the call... They're great, because to keep people out of trouble in Belfast, they put them all in call centres now, and they do cold calling, ringing up, saying, we're ringing to warn you about... Sorry, we're ringing to tell you about some of our special offers.
If there's nobody ringing from the north to the south, that Scotland may already have independence, they've just not phoned to tell us. Do you think it's... a new study by researchers from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology analysed phone calls from 7 different countries. How do you think the Americans got hold of all those phone calls? Is that it? The results showed that despite advances in communication technology, the vast majority of phone calls worldwide are made with people who live geographically close by. In the UK, less than 10% of communication crosses a dividing line situated 100 miles north of London. The BBC confirmed this communication issue, saying they had sent thousands of people to Salford from London who were never heard from again. Two points to Miles. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Jeremy, who doesn't give a fig about figgy pudding?
Apparently, the British have started to love sprouts more than Christmas pudding. And I think it's about what you give, you get back. Because I think my mother must have hated sprouts because she just wanted to boil them till they couldn't fight back. and she must have considered them to have committed some terrible ill in a previous life when they were fennel or something. And she would actually score the mark of the cross into it. And that allowed greater water penetration, because I think that was the main function of sprouts. If you boiled a sprout for a month, 2 months, a single sprout could contain about 2 gallons of water. So their main function on Christmas Day was to rehydrate old people. Rather like those little sponges on sticks they use in end-of-life care.
He just goes too far. Do you like sprouts? But it's one of the great mysteries of Christmas. I do not get it. It's like the Immaculate Conception, the Star of Bethlehem, the unfathomable popularity of Downton Abbey. I don't get it. It's one
of... It was part of a story that said that we had the unhealthiest Christmas lunch anywhere on the planet. You know, it's a reason to be proud to be British, isn't it, really? Instead, we should try the Czech menu because it was so much better for you and it consisted of fish soup, sour cabbage and cold potato salad. So that's definitely what we're having at ours.
A survey in the BBC's Good Food magazine found that the traditional Christmas pudding is now less popular than Brussels sprouts, but still infinitely more popular than Michael Gove. The Christmas pudding has been on British tables since medieval times, which is why it tastes that way. Christmas puddings are traditionally made with 13 ingredients to represent Jesus and the 12 apostles. Sprouts, cooked traditionally with butter and bacon, uses 3 ingredients to represent the 3 people who like the vegetable. As this show goes out on the 20th of December, you've missed the boat if you were thinking about having sprouts for your Christmas dinner and haven't got them boiling yet. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Jupp.
This was sent by Joyce Stringer from Chelmsford. It's a small article from the Valley News. Here is an example of the importance of accuracy in your tax return. HMRC has returned the tax return to a man in Evesham after he apparently answered one of the questions incorrectly. In response to the question, do you have anyone dependent on you, the man wrote, 2.1 million illegal immigrants, 1.1 million crackheads, 4.4 million unemployable Jeremy Kyle scroungers, 900,000 criminals in over 85 prisons, plus 650 idiots in Parliament and the whole of the European Commission. HMRC stated the response he gave was unacceptable. The man's response was, "Who did I miss out?"
Mr. Sale.
This is from Tim Barnsley in Streatham. A brothel running from a single bed flat above a Rose Hill shop was shut down by police yesterday. Officers entered the flat to find two Brazilian women aged 33 and 40 at 4:30. One said she was One said she was married, the other was wearing a towel.
Ms. McElvoy.
Right, this is from Sandra Billington. It's from Cambridge News Today under the headline Baby Boom for Rhinos at Chester Zoo. A spokesman said, tracking hormones can tell us things like whether or not an animal is a seasonal breeder, whether it's reached puberty, and whether it's cycling on a regular basis.
Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by Philip Edwards, and it's from a review of Dick Muckwhittington in Glasgow, starring John Barrowman. It's a review from The Stage. The reviewer says, Barrowman's dick is at the centre of all the action.
Let's take a look at the final score. Miles and Alexia have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Anne and Jeremy with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Aylesbury Vale District Council newsletter sent to us by Carol Nice.
Stuck for gift ideas? Why not treat a loved one to a brown bin for their garden waste this Christmas?
And with that, Merry Christmas and goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Miles Jubb, Alexis Sale, Anne McElvoy and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Neil Sweet. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, James Keckle and Tom Neenan, with additional material by Dan Kiss, Adam Kay and Gronya Maguire. The producer was Sam Michel.
Ho, ho, ho!